that's about it, as far as I know. So if you have a Bible with you and you want to follow along, again, our normal mode of operation is to go chapter by chapter, verse by verse. We finished the book of Jeremiah last Sunday night. Tonight we're doing kind of a one-off thing, something I've been reading and I want to look at. I thought it'd be interesting to go through, and then we'll be somewhere else next week. But if you want to look at the book of Judges, it's in the Old Testament. If you want to follow along, if not, you can listen. But the book of Judges. Judges falls at a time when you had Moses led the Israelites are in captivity in Egypt for a few hundred years. You know, you saw the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston. He does the miracles, the plagues, gets them out of there, leads them around for 40 years, takes them in, well, gets to the Promised Land. Joshua takes them in, and they fight. They have battles all over the place as they're driving the inhabitants out. Judges covers the period of time after that. Israel was a theocracy. They did not have a king like the nations around them. They were to be governed by God. And at various times during the period of Judges, the Lord would raise up different men and women, actually Deborah's one of them in there, to be a judge over Israel, to kind of lead things and help administer justice and all of that. But by and large, the book of Judges is characterized by one thing, and Judges chapter 17, verse 6 really sums it up. It says, in those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes. That was the way of the nation. Now, I know you can't relate to that today, but that's pretty much what it is. Everybody just kind of does whatever they feel like doing. They had God's law. They were called to be a certain way, but everybody was pretty much doing their own thing. There were certain people groups when they came into the land they were supposed to completely drive out of the land, and they didn't. And as a result of that, they were continually struggling with them. One of them was the Philistines, who they had issues with for a long time. Judges chapter 13, it starts out by saying the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, because when everyone's doing what's right in their own eyes, they're not doing what the Lord wants. And the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. They were subject to them. And there was a certain man of Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah. And his wife was barren, and she bare not. They have no kids. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto the woman. Interesting, she never gets a name in any of this. She's just the wife of Manoah, but she is certainly one of the heroes of the story. Angel shows up and says to her, behold, now you are barren and bear not, but you shall conceive and bear a son. Now therefore, beware, I pray thee, and drink not wine, nor strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. For lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son. No razor shall come to his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. Now her son is going to be Samson. He isn't going to complete the job. Ultimately, it'll go on for years until David is finally the one who gets some victory over the Philistines. But we see this guy, she's going to have a son, and his name is going to be Samson. He is unlike anybody else in the scripture on at least this one thing. It says he's going to be a Nazarite. Now, we hear Nazarene a lot, but it's not. There's a difference. Nazarene is someone who lives in Nazareth. A Nazarite in Numbers chapter 6, there was a provision in there about someone could take a temporary vow called the Nazarite vow. And basically, it was something that they would do to set themselves apart to God. And there were really four things that made up the Nazarite vow. First one, you wouldn't drink. In fact, not only would you not drink anything made of you know, grapes, you wouldn't touch grapes. You wouldn't eat grapes. You wouldn't eat raisins. You wouldn't eat anything that was made out of the vine. I mean, you had nothing to do with grapes. That was part one. Just stay away from that. Number two, at the beginning of your vow, you would shave your head. And then from then on, you would not cut your hair for the duration of your vow. Third thing, you wouldn't touch anything dead. You weren't allowed to come near any dead body. In fact, if one of your relatives died, you don't go to the funeral, you don't get near the body, there's none of that. And the fourth thing is you're supposed to be separated unto the Lord, which means you're supposed to be holy. You're supposed to not do anything that deals with sin. But that was a temporary thing. It would have a short duration. And then when it was over, you'd, you know, shave your head again at the end of the vow, and you'd go back and, you know, eat something made of grapes or whatever. But that was a temporary thing. This guy, he's one of only a few people in the Bible who his birth was announced. His, you know, you can get down to the whole predestination versus free will thing. I mean, we're told before he was ever born what he was going to do, how he was going to begin to deliver Israel from the Philistines. And he was going to be in this vow. In fact, his mom was told, you're going to get pregnant before you, he is going to be a Nazirite from the womb. It's kind of an interesting thought, because he's saying, the angel says to her, I don't want you to do these things, because you doing them is going to affect that mass of tissue cells that just, no, the baby in your womb. What you do affects, and we know that, you know, moms don't smoke, don't drink when you're pregnant because it affects the baby. And he said, no, I want you to separate yourself, because this child is going to be special. And, you know, you can read down, it says the woman came and told her husband, saying, the man of God came to me, and his countenance like was like an angel. He was very terrible, but I didn't ask where he was from. And he says, you're going to bear a son, you'll conceive, don't drink any wine, strong drink, don't eat anything unclean. The child shall be a Nazirite to God from the womb to the day of his death. His whole life he's going to be a Nazirite, separated to me. And then Manoah, verse 8, entreated the Lord and said, oh my Lord, man, you know, dad prays. So here you've got this guy, and he's got all this stuff going for him. He's predicted. He's told the Lord is going to be with him. He's going to be, you know, separated unto the Lord. He's got godly parents, right? He doesn't have any bad influences starting from a real young age. And we'll just skip a little bit down to verse 24, where it says, the woman bare a son, called his name Samson. The child grew. The Lord blessed him. And the spirit of the Lord began to move on him at times in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol. So that's his beginning. That's not a bad start. You know, that's a better start than most of us had. Godly parents, set aside to God from his birth. The thing is, we read through his life and it's just one big train wreck, right? But until the end, when you look in the New Testament, he's referenced in Hebrews chapter 11 in the Hall of Faith. Yet, pretty much all we read about is his failure through most of the story of his life. You wonder why some stories are in the Bible. I think Samson is there as an extreme example of don't do this. You know, there are some lessons to learn in life from other people if you possibly can. Lessons about breaking the law, lessons about making poor decisions and choosing a boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, lessons about substances that you should not put in your body. You know, when you read, you turn on the news and you see somebody ingesting some substance, you know, there was one I read the other day about some college kid who got high or whatever and stripped down naked and jumped out of his dorm room four floors up. Probably take a lesson, kids, before you go to college. Don't do that, all right? You know, you see these people taking bath salts and then eating people's faces. Take a lesson from that. Why would you, have you ever read a good story about someone who said, you know, his life was really in the toilet, but then he tried bath salts and everything improved? I mean, you never read that. So learn from that. Samson makes some very, very bad choices, and I think he's there as a guidepost for us. Chapter 14 starts out and it says, and Samson went down. And I mean, that right there, that's the story of his life. Samson went down. Samson went down. It says, he went down to Timnath, and he saw a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now remember, here's the Jews, here's the Philistines. These guys, pagan, do all kinds of wicked stuff. I don't want you to have anything to do with them. They actually are, you are in bondage to them. They are ruling, you are in subjection. He goes down, and he sees a woman there. And his issue, I think, time and time again, is going to be his eyes. He goes places with his eyes he should never go. And he came up and he told his father and his mother, and this is the first recorded words of this man of faith, I've seen a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me to wife. Go get her. I've seen a nice looking woman. I want her. Go get her, mom and dad. And we talked about this morning with Mary, how in that culture, marriages were arranged, usually before you were born. But Samson tells dad and mom, and listen to the response. Then his father and his mother said unto him, is there never a woman among the daughters of your brethren? How often does this happen? He doesn't say, what are you thinking? He's like, can you just pick one woman from the Jews? Does it always have to be one of them? I mean, it seems like he's continually going after women from the Philistines. Or among all my people, that you go to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said unto his father, get her for me, for she pleases me well. Do you know what that phrase is, she pleases me well? It's the exact same one that's translated, they did what was right in their eyes. He says, she's right in my eyes. She looks good to me. I don't care about her personality. I don't care about her skill set, whether she'd be a good mom. She is looking fine. I want her. Go get her. I mean, and that was Samson to a T. The next verse is actually a little troubling. But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord. Wait a minute. It was of the Lord? I don't think it meant that his continual lusting after strange women was of the Lord. I think what it's saying is that he had some lust issues, no doubt about it. We'll read through the whole thing. He's got a problem with the ladies. But the Lord used that and directed it toward the Philistines because he was really looking to pick a fight with the Philistines because he's eventually going to use them. So it wasn't that his sin was caused by the Lord, because we know the Lord doesn't tempt anyone to sin, nor does he cause them to sin. But the fact that he was going after a Philistine girl, the Lord's hand was in that, because it says he sought an occasion against the Philistines for all the time the Philistines had dominion. Then went Samson down and his father. So he's always looking after strange women. What was a Nazirite? Let's just talk about the Nazirite for a minute. Okay, nothing to do with grapes. Don't touch anything dead. Don't shave your head. Be holy. Okay, so you're always going after strange women. You're already blown the holy thing. Right, so we're already 0 for 1 anyways. So where does he go? Then Samson down, his father and his mother, they went to Timnath and they came to the vineyards. Why are you near a vineyard? Okay, there's grapes in a vineyard. You shouldn't be there. Don't be there. And if it's not enough of an example for you, what happens when you go where you're not supposed to go? Behold, a young lion roared against him. When it says young, it means like in its full strength. This is like not the old zoo lion or the circus lion. This is like the, oh yeah, I'm Simba, king of the jungle lion, right? So he steps off where he should be into where he shouldn't be, and he's immediately attacked by a lion. You think there's a correlation there? I would think there might be. Have you seen a lion? You been to the zoo? They're bad. I mean, you ever mess with a cat as a kid? I have cats now. We mess every once in a while. Like, you hold a cat and then someone does something to startle the cat and it will just like wreck you. Have you ever had that when they go at you? And it's just little, you know? Lion, hundreds of pounds, attacks him. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he rent him, that's tore him, as he would have rent a kid, a baby goat. And he had nothing in his hand, but he told not his father or mother what he's done. Apparently this lion attacks him. I looked it up just because I was really curious. The bite strength of a lion is actually not the greatest in the animal kingdom. I mean, it's 600 pounds per square inch with those sharp teeth, so it's going to wreck you if it bites you. Actually, the Nile crocodile has 5,000 pounds per square inch. But nonetheless, you know, a lion, full-grown lion, would just tear you up. And he takes this thing, grabs both jaws, and just rips it in half. Think about that for a second. This is not a guy. And see, I don't think, you know, if you've seen the stories portrayed, I had children's Bibles as a kid, right? And, you know, or even you might have one of those Bibles that has a few pictures scattered throughout it. And, you know, once I get talking long, you'll start looking at the pictures to try to, you know, keep yourself entertained. There's usually one of Samson. And he always looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? They've always got him just jacked and ripped and looking like Hercules. I don't think he did. I mean, you hear people saying, what's the secret of your great strength? And he's not saying, look at these pythons. You know, I mean, he's not doing that. I think he looks just like an average guy, and when the Spirit of the Lord comes on him, he does, and his strength things that he does, this is not something that the strongest guy does. You know, our strong men try to pretend they're strong by ripping phone books. He rips a lion in half that attacks him. What's also disturbing to me personally when I read it, it says that he ripped it in half just as you would have ripped a young goat in half. Who does that, all right? I mean, if it said he ripped it like a piece of paper or he ripped it like a bag of chips, I'm thinking, okay, but what did they do in that culture? Oh, yeah, I remember. I just took that goat. But then I got to thinking, you know, when I was a kid growing up on the farm, we had turkeys. We grew chickens, but we also grew turkeys. And we grew big turkeys. You know, we'd share the time with the Haineses next door, and we'd grow them together. When you're killing chickens, you know, you can grab them by the feet, take a hatchet, do the thing. You know, you can let them run and see them bounce into things, but it's not good for the meat. There's no sense bruising up an animal. So a lot of times you just hold it and let it do its thing. And then turkey, some of these birds that we'd get, when they were dressed out and clean, they'd weigh 45 pounds. And a bird like that, what lets its wings start going on you, will really beat you up. Well, on the side of the barn, they made this big stainless steel funnel. And they'd take the turkey and they'd stick it upside down through the funnel so just its head's coming out, and then you could do it and it wouldn't get hurt. Except when it came turkey killing time, we'd have, you know, like 25, 30 turkeys. And so, it's a nasty job. I'm still scarred from it. But worst of all was one of my father's friends, Millard Hatch, some of you guys might know him. He'd come over, and I couldn't believe it first time I saw it. He'd grab this turkey that probably weighed, you know, 60 pounds, snap its neck, pull its head off. Just poof, like that. You know, I'm thinking that's probably about like taking a goat and ripping it in half. Maybe that's what they did. I don't know. But he just shreds this lion. But he didn't tell his mother and father what he'd done. And he went down and he talked with a woman. And she pleased Samson well, whatever that means. And after a time, he returned to take her. And he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. Because back then, there's no cell phone, right? There's no selfie with him with the lion. So he couldn't post it on Facebook. But he wanted to see it, if it was still there. So he goes back. And he's got this two-piece lion. I'm sure the meat's all been eaten off by whatever. But the rib cage is still there and the skin and stuff. And it says, and behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion. So some bee had come along, built a hive, and these bees are actually making honey in this lion. And Samson, remember, don't go in the vineyard, don't cut your hair, don't do anything unholy, don't touch anything dead. Oh, half a lion filled with honey. Let's eat, you know? And so he took the rub of his hands, he went on eating roadkill honey can you imagine you find a coon on the side of the road with some honeycomb. Are you going to eat that? Samson doesn't care. He'll put anything in his body. I don't care. I'm not going to hurt me. And he came to his father and mother. Hey, look, I found some honey. And he gave it to him. He didn't tell them where he found it. It says he didn't told them not that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. So they eat it. So from a ceremonial standpoint, they're defiled at this point. Not only that, but it's very unhealthy to eat stuff out of a dead carcass. And, you know, on one hand, here is Samson's sin, and lo and behold, he is defiling others, and they don't know it. And that's the way it happens. You know, you and I don't live in a vacuum. If I decide to go out and be stupid and do stupid things, my family is going to suffer. That's what happens. Sin spreads. Well, his father goes down to the woman. They made a feast, as young men do, and it came to pass when they saw him, they brought 30 friends with him. And Samson says unto them, I will now put forth a riddle unto you. If you can certainly declare it to me within 7 days of the feast and find it out, I'll give you 30, it says sheets in the King James, it's like robes, and 30 changes of garments. But if you can't declare it to me, then you'll give me 30 sheets and 30 changes of garments. And they said to him, put forth your riddle that we may hear it. And he said to them, out of the eater came forth meat, out of the strong came forth sweetness. And they could not in 3 days expound the riddle. And it came to pass on the seventh day that they said to Samson's wife, entice thy husband that he may declare unto us the riddle, lest we burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you called us to take what we have? Isn't it so? So Samson's wife wept before him and said, you hate me and you love me not. You've put forth a riddle unto the children of my people. You haven't told it to me. And he said, behold, I haven't told it to my father and my mother. Will I tell it to you? And she wept before him the 7 days while the feast lasted. And it came to pass on the seventh day, he told her because she lay sore upon him. So she just nags him until finally he tells her. And she told the riddle to the children of the people. And the men of the city said unto him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? And I don't know what to make of what he says back. He says to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you had not found out my riddle. I don't know if she was a heavy girl or what the deal is, but... So then the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him. He goes down to Ascalon, and he kills 30 guys, takes their clothes, and gives it to pay off the debt. And the wife is given over to his best man. I'm not going to read everything he does here. Some of it's pretty amazing stuff. You know, he goes down to see his wife again, and he finds out that she's been given to his best man. And so he gets angry, and he catches a bunch of foxes, ties them together, sticks firebrands between their tails and let them run between the fields, and they burn all the fields. So then the Philistines get angry, and they burn his wife and her father to death. And so he gets really angry, verse 8 of chapter 15, and it says, he smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. He just goes and starts wading into them. Because think about it for a minute. You know, this is back before the day that Sam Colt made all men equal. You got a guy who can rip a lion in half like it's, you know, a goat, I guess. He could just rip this lion in half. On a battlefield where the only weapons require you to be in close personal contact. So you come at him with what, a sword? You got one shot. And if he gets his hands on you, you're torn in half, right? I mean, he is unstoppable. Without a projectile weapon to keep you away, he is unbelievably strong. And so he wipes a bunch of them out. The Israelites go to capture him to give him over because they're afraid of the Philistines, and he lets them tie him up. Verse 14, I love this part. When he was come to Lehi, he's tied up by his brethren. He says, "You know, if I let you take me, you're not going to hurt me, right? No, 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 we're just going to turn you over." So they tie him up. He says, "No problem, go ahead, tie me up." When he came to Lehi, the Philistines shouted against him, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him. The cords that were upon his arms became as flax, like yarn that was burnt with a fire. So he just snaps the bonds. He finds a new jawbone of an ass. There's a donkey head. Jawbone. Still got the meat on it? Does it not have the meat on it? I mean, every time I've seen it portrayed in, like, the children's comic books, it's just the white bone. But it says it's the new. I mean, is this still got... I'm certainly doesn't look new by the time he's done, because with this jawbone of a donkey... I mean, you see some guy running at you with a donkey head. Are you really going to be that scared? Until he kills 1,000 of you, which is what he does. He kills 1,000 people, beating him to death with the donkey's face. You know, I've said before, there are certain scenes I'd like to see the video of when we get to heaven. I want to follow this whole story and see what it actually looked like. When you're actually tearing a lion apart, beating people to death with a donkey's face. This guy had a crazy life. Samson said, with the jawbone of an ass, heaps and heaps. And with the jaw of an ass, I have slain 1,000 men. That's my ministry, by the way. And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking, that he cast away the jawbone out of his hand. And they called that place Ramoth Lehi, which I guess means Jawbone Hill. And it says, check this out. This is the one verse that shows the prayer life of Samson, his spiritual life. And he was sore athirst, and he called on the Lord and said, you've given me this great deliverance into the hand of your servant, and now I'm going to die for thirst and fall to these uncircumcised. His one prayer is a complaint. I did all this stuff, and you're going to let me die of thirst. Amen. And God gives, I mean, that's who this guy is. He is not. He's been given all of this stuff. He's been given the Spirit of God on him like nobody ever has. The strength that he has, the advantages that he has, the promises that he has. And he just plays fast and loose with all of it. He does everything he's told not to do. His prayer life is just one complaint. And then we come to chapter 16, and it says, then went Samson to Gaza, and he saw there a harlot, that's a prostitute. And he went in unto her. And it was told to the Gazites, saying, Samson's come hither. And they compassed him in other words, and laid wait. They surrounded the place, and they waited for him all night at the gate of the city, and were quiet all the night, saying, in the morning, when it's day, we'll kill him. Samson lay till midnight. He arose at midnight, and he took the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts, and he went away with them, bar and all, put them upon his shoulders, and he carried them up to the top of the hill that's before Hebron. I mean, just think about the feat that was involved to rip the gates off the city walls, the whole thing, the bar, the beams that are holding the big doors, throw them over your shoulder, walk to the top of a hill and leave them. He has some significant strength. And it came to pass afterwards that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek. Now, Sorek was known for one thing, grapes. It was Napa Valley. It was the best wine. And he's in the place where he's not supposed to be, and he falls in love with a woman named Delilah. You know anybody named Delilah? There's a few names that don't get passed around a lot in the Bible. Jezebel, you don't meet many of those. Delilah either. And the lords of the Philistines came up unto her, and they said to her, entice him, and see wherein his great strength lies, and by what means we may prevail against him, that we may bind him and afflict him, and we'll give you every one of us 1,100 pieces of silver. They go to this woman. They recognize, from looking at Samson's life from as far of a distance as they can so he doesn't kill him with the face of an animal, this guy has a problem with the ladies. Every time we see him showing up into one of our cities, it's to see one of our ladies. He's got a problem with his eyes. He lets anything into his eyes. And he's got a thing for this woman, Delilah. So they all go to Delilah and they say, we need you to figure out the secret to bind him and afflict him. We want to find out how to capture him and hurt him. That's bind him and afflict him. So you think, what super tricky way is she going to use to weasel out of him the secret of how he can be bound and afflicted? This is the super tricky way she comes up with. Delilah says to Samson, tell me, I pray thee, wherein thy great strength lies and wherewith you might be bound to afflict you. She says straight up, how can I tie you up and hurt you? Hello? You know, it's time to go at this point. I mean, I don't care how pretty she is. There's a lot of fish in the sea, all right? This one says, I want to hurt you. And you think, what kind of a moron, you know? And then you turn over the side of your pack of cigarettes where it says, this thing will cause cancer or make your head explode or whatever they have for a warning these days. And yet, you know, or you read about people with bath salts and then people take bath salts. Or you read all the commercials about this is, you know, your brain and this is your brain on drugs with the egg in the pan. Or, you know, you play with this and you're going to get burned with that. You read all these things, you hear all these things, and then you see people, including ourselves, who do them over and over again. You know where your weakness is, and yet you go there anyway. Because you think, it won't happen to me. You know, everybody who drinks and drives doesn't get caught. No, they don't. But a lot do. So she says straight out, this is what I want to do. But see, he feels like he's untouchable. Because he's got, you know, God on his side, right? God's his guy, and it doesn't matter. He's been told from day one, this is the rules. You got to stay away from these four things. He's broken pretty much all of them. The only thing he hasn't done is cut his hair. He's done all the other three time and time again with no issue. So Samson says unto her, if they bind me with seven green withes that have never been dried, these seven green, you know, vines or reeds, then I shall be weak. And here's the key, and be as any other man. Then the lords of the Philistines brought up to her seven green withes, which had not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now there were men lying in wait, abiding with her in the chamber. And she said unto them, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he broke the withes as a thread of tow. A piece of yarn is broken when it touches the fire, so his strength was not known. So she says to him, how do I hurt you? He says, well, if you tie me up with these seven reeds, I'll be just weak like any other man. Next thing you know, he falls asleep and he wakes up and he's tied up with the exact things that he told her. And she says, the Philistines are on you and there's a bunch of guys there. And he snaps them and they all run away. So Delilah says to Samson, behold, you've mocked me and told me lies. Now tell me, I pray thee, wherewith you might be bound. And he's playing with her at this point. The interesting thing, no, look what happens. He says to her, if they bind me with new ropes that have never been occupied, then I'll be weak. and be as any other man. Delilah therefore took new ropes and bound him therewith and said to him, The Philistines be upon you, Samson. And there were liers in wait abiding in the chamber, and he broke them from off his arms like a thread. Again, sin will take exactly what you give it. I mean, any ground, any foothold, any inside information, any attempt in your life that you allow sin, it will take right to the uttermost level and then try to nail you time and time again. That's just how it is. And Delilah said to Samson, and, you know, this is what ladies do to us. We're just stupid. You know, you read through, there's that one proverb where Solomon writes, and if there's anyone who can write a proverb about women and their effect on men, it ought to be Solomon, because he had about 1,000 wives. So he knows, if anyone knows. And he says, you know, I'm sitting in my room, and I look out my window, and I see a moron. That's really what he says. I see a moron. And you think, how could you know just from looking across the seat? I mean, I can look at someone and say he's dressed like a moron. You know, maybe the hat's on sideways or the pants are down around his knees or whatever. But he might be really smart and just a poor dresser, right? But Solomon says, no, I see this guy across the street and he's a moron. The reason why he knows he's a moron is because of where he is. He's going to the prostitute's house. You know, and she entices him, and she starts flattering him with fair speech and everything. And it says he goes after her like an ox to the slaughter. You know, she says all of these things, and she says, oh, I've been waiting for you, and it's all about you, and I've perfumed you my bed, and we can do this, and we can do that. And it's like he doesn't know it's for his life. That's what it says. It's like an ox to the slaughter. That's what happens. And Samson, man, she keeps coming at him. You've mocked me, told me lies. And he said, well, if you weave the 7 locks of my head with the web, in other words, they got a big loom there. If my hair, because he hasn't had his hair cut ever in his life, he's got this huge head of hair. And he said, if you take these 7 braids, apparently he's got it in, and you weave it. Now he's starting to get close. You know, that's where the issue is. That's the one thing that he hasn't done that he wasn't supposed to do yet. And he's starting to get closer and closer to it. If you weave that into the web. And of course, she fastened it with a pin. She does exactly what he says and says unto him, The Philistines be upon you, Samson. He awakened out of sleep. He went away with the pin and the beam. He just takes off with a loom attached to his head. You know, doesn't hurt him. And then she says this, How can you say that I love you when your heart isn't with me? You've mocked me these times. And you've told me where you haven't told me where your great strength lies. And it came to pass when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him so that his soul was vexed unto death. Literally, she nagged him to death day after day. And finally, he's singing, you know, the end of the meatloaf song. So now I'm praying for the end of time. Hurry up, and around. Yeah, I mean, that's where he is. He just wants to die. And she nags him. And you remember that song, don't you? You could probably sing it along with it. Isn't that horrible? Some things just never leave your head. You hear it a couple times and it's just right there again. I'm sorry I brought you there. He was vexed unto death that he told her all his heart. And he said unto her, There has not come a razor upon my head. For I've been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me. And I'll become weak and be like any other man. And when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, Come up this once, for he showed me his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came up to her, and they brought money in their hand. And she made him sleep upon her knees. She called for a man. She caused him to shave off the 7 locks of his head. She began to afflict him, and his strength went from him. And she said, The Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And this is, to me, one of the scariest verses in the Bible. He awoke out of his sleep, and he said, I'll go out as at other times before and shake myself. And he knew not that the Lord was departed from him. And this time he didn't get up and get away. And the Philistines took him, and they put out his eyes. Literally, they bored out his eyes. And they brought him down to Gaza, and they bound him with fetters of brass, and he did grind in the prison house. Ultimately, and you know, those 3 things happen with sin: blind, bind, grind. And he is at the place now where he let any old thing into his eyes. Now he has no eyes. He let anything have a hold of him. Now he's bound completely. He ignored spiritual things. Now he's grinding like an animal. That's where his life is in prison. Verse 22, howbeit the hair on his head began to grow again after he was shaven. And obviously, some of his hair grows back, but that's not the thing that happens that changes everything. It's not the hair. Because now that his eyes are gone, he can see better than he ever saw before. He isn't distracted by ladies anymore. You know, Jesus addressed that, talking about people's arguments. Well, I got eyes, don't I? Well, you think your eyes are your problem? Pluck it out. You'll find out it's a heart issue. While the lords of the Philistines gathered them together to offer a great sacrifice unto Dagon, their god, to rejoice, for they said, our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hand. And when the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, our God has delivered us into our hands, our enemy, and the destroyer of our country, which slew many of us. And it came to pass, when their hearts were merry, they said, call for Samson, that he may make us sport. They get drunk, and they say, bring him up, we want to make fun of him. And they called for Samson out of the prison house, and they made them sport, they're mocking him, and they set him between the pillars. And Samson said to the lad that held him by the hand, I got to have a little boy leading him around now, suffer me that I may feel the pillars whereupon the house stands, that I may lean upon them. He's a humble guy at this point. Everything that he had has been taken from him. I think he realizes what he's lost. You can tell by the way he's going to pray here in a second. His attitude has changed quite a bit from, you know, his Thor prayer of, give me drink. I need mead, God. It says, the house was full of men and women. All the lords of the Philistines were there. They were upon the roof, about 3,000 men and women. And behold, while Samson made sport. And Samson called unto the Lord, and he said, O Lord God, remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. He has a new prayer life now. Something about prison that'll do that for you. Change the way you pray. Affliction does that. Samson took hold of the two middle pillars upon which the house stood, and on which it was borne up, one with the right hand, one with the other. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And he bowed himself with all his might. And the house fell upon the lords, upon the people that were therein. So the dead which he slew at his death were more than they which he slew in his life. You know, a couple things from this. All of us have made our lives a shipwreck in one way or another to some degree. Some of us worse than others or in more obvious ways than others. Samson had everything given to him at the beginning and he threw it all away because he was ruled by his appetites. But even a guy who had failed as gloriously as Samson did was forgiven, found grace at the end. And even though there was definitely failure involved in his life, the end of his life, through his redemption from his failure, he had more success than he ever did with any of the gifts he had before he failed. So if you're like most of us who have trashed your life in some way or another, understand, we serve a God of the second chances. The other thing is, he had an eye problem, no doubt about it. You know, you read the book of Job, and Job says, I made a covenant with my eyes. Why should I think upon a maiden? I made a promise that I was not going to put that in front of me. Psalms 101, verse 3, I will set no wicked thing before my eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It won't cleave to me. I mean, you see these people who recognize, I have a problem. And look, different people have problems in different areas. Some people struggle with porn. Some people struggle with drugs or booze or alcohol or thievery or money or pride or lying or whatever you struggle with. Recognize that you're weak. And flee from the things. I mean, God is our refuge. We sang songs about that tonight. And certainly, if you fail, understand, 1 John 1:9, if we confess our sins, he's faithful and just to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Learn from his bad example. Amen? Lord, thank you, Father, that you can take messed up people and do something with them. Lord, give us the strength to flee evil, to cleave to what is good. Lord, forgive us for the ways that we failed, and Lord, give us the strength to avoid them in the future. And Lord, please come quickly. We look forward to that day when the struggle is over. Let it be today, we ask in your name. Amen. Grace and peace, guys.